engaging us with and allowing us to be involved with. Two tsunamis have happened in the week with regard to Praise House. One you were privy to, and the second one you were not privy to. And so I want to bring together the two events. And get you to try and understand what God is saying and what God is doing. Last week we had a packed house. I would say because Jesus was in the house, but also because Ed Miliband was here for our morning service. It's not often you have the leader of the political party in your morning service, and especially at this election time. And spent half of my week answering press and media questions and interviews. And one of the things that most of the media people wanted to know was, did we invite him or did he come on his own? The man publicly has declared he's an atheist, he doesn't believe in God. But then after last week, he began to say he wasn't too sure anymore. He didn't believe in God. After last Sunday, he said he wasn't too sure anymore. Which tells me that something touched his heart. So he can be persuaded. So I spent quite a lot of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday dealing with the after effect of the tsunami, you know, the aftershock and all that stuff. And at about 6 o'clock on Thursday, I got a call. And that call was from somebody acting on behalf of the Prime Minister, asking if I could keep my Saturday morning free. And I think it's because of what happened on Sunday. So the Prime Minister and his team decided it would be good to come to Croydon as well. And so I said, sure, all things are possible through him who believes. Remember, this is 6 p.m. on Thursday, but I was told not to say anything to anybody until the following day. Because as at that Thursday, they had not even, it doesn't have to be too loud, everybody can hear me. As at that Thursday, they had not heard or confirmed if the Prime Minister still had any time to come to Croydon. Bearing in mind, yesterday was a commemoration day, and so there was a big ceremony planned for yesterday. And it was supposed to be a breakfast meeting here on Saturday morning, yesterday. So you would have only found out you had breakfast meeting on Friday night. And God help us if we didn't fill this place up within 12 hours. And so, but sometime around 4 o'clock on Friday, I got a message that the security people had not allowed the meeting to go on because the Prime Minister's office had not given them enough notice to do their job. I know with these things, if they had gone ahead and something went wrong, heads will roll. Nobody wants to lose their job. So after the day was spent trying to persuade them it was the right thing to come here, not by me, by the people who were planning it, but eventually at about half past six again on Friday, they said, well, it's going to be at a secret location, and can I be there? So, and I wasn't told about this secret location until about 9:30 p.m. About 9 p.m. I was told where it was going to be. So I did request if I could be allowed to come with some people because I don't work alone. Last week, Sunday, I told the Croydon leaders, if they don't back it, I won't do it. because I don't work alone and I refuse to say I'm representing people, but when you look behind me, you don't see the people. So that's why we had the large turnout of leaders leaving their Sunday morning services to come here last Sunday. At about 9:30 or 10 o'clock, I got another message. It's amazing how people operate. That after the Prime Minister has spoken to the small group of people, can myself and another person prepare to have a private meeting with him? No agenda was set up, and I thought, what's this private meeting with? So two of us and the Prime Minister were supposed to have a private meeting yesterday morning. At that point, I said to Sandra, I sure do need to pray. I need to pray again to find out from God, what is it that you want me to say to this man? He's our Prime Minister, and surely there's a message for him. And got to the venue of the meeting yesterday. They stopped me and said, wait. The sitting was planned, and they took me to my seat. But I noticed there was a vacant seat next to me, so I asked, who is sitting next to me? After a little while, they said, wait and see. So I was in the front row, and I'll show you the video in a second. And I was bewildered, you know, okay, you sat me here, who is sitting next to me? They said, wait and see. I honestly thought it was one of the MPs. Lo and behold, 8:30, the Prime Minister came to me straight away, shook my hands, and sat down next to me, and I thought, all right, it's like a film show. And he finished his conversation with the crowd, and then we were ushered into a private room to see him. Sadly enough, yesterday, what you saw in the news is nothing near what the man said. And so I have managed to get from his office this last night the full video of his visit to Croydon. On our way in at about 8 o'clock yesterday morning, we heard in the news he was going to set his agenda for how he's going to work with ethnic minorities yesterday morning in Croydon. Then I began to understand why he needed us to be there. And I think he had very good things to say about engaging with ethnic minorities. And I'm going to circulate this video today after the service, but I thought you should be first to see it before we circulate the video and I put it on Facebook. So I've asked, it's a 15-minute video. We can fast forward some of the area. Are you ready to play it? So Daniel is going to play the video, and then I'll come and summarize. People from the ethnic minority group who have their own issues and are lagging behind in so many ways. And I feel that how we're going to do it is when God raises people who can stand up and say, keep your contracts, keep your posts, keep your appointments, I will speak my voice, unless that appointment is such that will further the cause that you are representing. For instance, Ed Miliband said here last week that he's going to appoint a religious envoy, somebody to the United Nations, somebody who will speak on behalf of faith communities, on behalf of the United Kingdom. And one of the things we told him upstairs, we presented him with a copy of the Black Manifesto, which took us 4 years to put together. And you guys didn't know we were working behind the scene. And we represented issues here that both Ed Miliband and David Cameron, David Cameron even said to me yesterday, I mentioned this to him, he said he has a copy. Because if he didn't have one, I would have given him one. And it represents areas where we believe as a church we can work together with those in authority. We have spelled out the needs of the ethnic minority group. And what we said to Ed Miliband last week and we said to the Prime Minister yesterday, we are prepared for every one of the issues that we have highlighted. We are prepared to appoint 10 people who can work with each government department to see that those things happen. And we're not asking them to pay us a salary. We're not asking them to pay our, we can pay our transport fare to go there. We're saying, give us an opportunity to speak to the voice of this nation, to be a voice in this nation. Give us an opportunity to make a change in our lifetime. I was saying to Sandra this morning that oftentimes you start with these things and you may not even see all the changes in your own lifetime. But we want to leave a legacy for our children and our children's children so that their future is better than what we have experienced. I did not grow up in this country, so I don't know and I don't understand what racism is all about and how what impact it makes on people. But when I listen to people like Sandra, who was an only black girl in a secondary, in a school, and what impact that had on her and on her life. When I listen to her tell her stories about what happened when they were living in an estate and they were the only black people and people used to throw tomatoes and eggs at their door. And I think it will not happen in my children's time. And to stop it from happening in my children's generation, we've got to do something right now. And so two major events have happened in the last week that were not orchestrated by us. It just came to us from God. Now, the question I want to ask, and I'm asking God, why us? Why did you choose us? Why did you choose such an insignificant church in a place called Croydon, where everybody, if you have ever been outside of Croydon, you will understand what they call us. They call us the Kronks, as in the Bronx. They think we're far away from civilization. And then you choose an insignificant church called Praise House with just a handful of people to do two major things in the nation. Last week was Ed Miliband's opportunity to launch for the first time his agenda and his manifesto for working with the churches and for working with ethnic minorities. And where did they launch it? Here in Praise House. And so the media, if they want to get any information as to what he wants to do in that sector of our population, it's the information that they would have received from here last week. Yesterday, the Prime Minister launched his manifesto for the for how he wants to work with the black community, again in Croydon. And just if it wasn't for the security forces, it would have also been launched here. And I feel in my heart it was launched here. You know how that God said to Abraham, go and offer up your son, Isaac. And he took Isaac and he went. And in the New Testament, he reports that because it was in his heart to do it, it was accounted as being done. And I think because it was in the heart of the Prime Minister and his team to launch their manifesto here, but for security reasons it didn't happen, doesn't mean it wasn't launched here. In my mind, it was launched here and we were part of that launching. And so you ask yourself, God, what is going on? Why is this happening? I do recall that 2 weeks ago, I talked to you. Was it 2 weeks ago I preached about Judah in preparation for what was happening? And I said, Judah was the unlikeliest of the people that any one of us would have thought would have made it to the place where he became the great-great-great-great-grandfather of our Lord Jesus Christ. His mother was not even in the picture. His mother was one of those Tesco adverts, buy one, get one free. She wasn't so much loved by her father. And the man who married her didn't even love her. He stuck with her. And then Judah was not even son number one. He wasn't son number two. He wasn't son number three. He was son number four. And I said to you, if I was God and I was trying to save the world, the first boy I will give birth to will be the one that will save the world so that we get over it quickly. But God doesn't always work that way. I heard a story yesterday because soon after the meeting, I went to speak at a group of leaders in Perley and Kenley who came together, and I went to speak to them. And I heard a story yesterday about a lady who, before her daughter was born, God gave her a word that it is through her children that the daughter will come to know the Lord, through her daughter's children, so her grandchildren. And so when the daughter got married and news came that she was pregnant, mom got all excited. Oh, yes, the child who will lead my daughter finally to the Lord is going to be born. Guess what? That baby died. Ectopic pregnancy. So she became pregnant a second time. Guess what? That one died as well. And you think, God, what is going on here? The child, the woman, you gave a word of prophecy that it's her children that will lead her to the Lord. And two of her children have died. And to make matters worse, they had removed one of her tubes. She became pregnant a third time. And she gave birth at 22 weeks. The third child was born 22 weeks old. And the doctors had to quickly bring the child out because the child was growing outside of the tube. The third child was growing outside of the tube, and they had to bring the child out quickly, lest the child and the mother die. And it was only after the child had been removed, and the doctors explained to this lady why they did what they did, that she turned to her mom and said, "Mom, that prophecy that God told you before I was born is about to happen. I give my heart to the Lord Jesus." And that's how that daughter has given her life to God and is serving God now. Now, you and I know that if it was up to me, it's the first child that would have done the business so that quickly we get it in. But God doesn't always work the way we think he's going to work. His ways are past finding out. And so I'm not going to answer the question, why us? But I have scriptures that encourage me this morning. Have you ever wondered what happened to the manger where Jesus was born? Food for thought. Jesus was not born in a 5-star hotel, you know that. Jesus was not born in the best hospital in town. Jesus was not born in where you would have thought that the King of Kings, if it was me, yes, playing God again, if it was me and I knew that Jesus needed to be born, in the first place, I would make sure that the security around Jesus was tight. I would make sure that the hygiene, health, that the health and the environment of that place was quite as high as it could have been. I would have made sure that on the day of his birth, everything would work very well. But just think for a moment. Jesus is born in an insignificant, on the side manger where animals go and feed, are fed and they're sleeping. That's where he was born. But I've always wondered, after he was born, I don't know about you, but if it was in today's Christianity that Jesus was born in a manger, we probably would have built a monument around the manger and told you, if any woman here is believing God for pregnancy, come and pray here. If you're believing God for a miracle, come and pray here. We would have done something. It's just like the disciples when Jesus, you know, at the Mount of Transfiguration, when he transfigured and Moses and Elijah appeared before him, what did the disciples say? They said, "Lord, let us build you 3 monuments here. One for you, one for Elijah, and one for Moses." Why did they want to do that? Because it would have brought some money. It would have brought some fame. And Jesus said, "You don't understand what you're talking about. I don't know what happened to the manger after Jesus." The Bible doesn't tell us whether it was knocked down, whether it was burnt, whether the man continued with his business. And you know what it tells me? We are like the manger sometimes. That God decides to choose you to give birth to something does not mean you take glory in it. You may be forgotten after the event. Hello? Looking at me in that way. You may be forgotten. We may be forgotten. And I said this to Ed Miliband last week. I said, if you win, and now it's up to you who you vote for. You vote according to your conscience, according to your conviction. It's got nothing to do with me. Although, if I was living in Central Croydon, I would vote for Gavin Bowell. And I said that publicly because of all the politicians in the last 10 years in Croydon who have done so much and who have helped us, like in top care, meet our needs, introduce us to so many places and social services, and given us the opportunities to run the projects that we have run, it's one man, Gavin. When he was a local councillor, He did so much and continues to do so much. I don't live in Central Croydon. I live in South Croydon. It's a different kettle of fish in that area. But, you know, at the end of the day, you do what you want to do. But I kind of feel that if we began to think that it was because of us that God did what he did, we'll miss the mark. After we have done everything that we have been called to do, let us but say that we are unprofitable servants who have done the will of the master. People look at us and they say, well, you must be well-placed, you must be well-connected. And I said, no, I am only living out what God told me in September 1996. I am only seeing now, how many years later, almost 19 years now, is it? 96 to now, is it 90? Yeah? 19 years, it's only happening after 19 years that God spoke to me about what he's going to do. And so we are seeing it unfold before us, the things that God has promised. It is marvelous in my sight. And when I said to Ed Miliband last week in my office, I said, you may never see me again. You may never call on me again. I may never meet you again. But remember these very things that I'm saying. And there were some home truths that I told him in my office. He's in my office, for goodness sake. That's my domain. That's my territory. If I come to his office, I will obey his rule. If you come here, you will obey my rule. That's why I gave him four conditions last week. Number one, you have to come in during worship. Number two, you have to sit down there and listen to me, even if it's for 5 minutes. Number three, we've got to pray for you because we're a church, we're Christians, that's what we do. Number four, we will generate the questions and appoint the people to ask you the questions. On those conditions, then you can tell us what you want to tell us. Otherwise, no deal. Yeah? No deal. I'm not scared to tell them no deal. And so I want to just encourage you this morning that we are like the manger. We have done what we're supposed to do. We'll continue to do what it is that God has asked us to do. None of the events that happened this week was pre-planned. They came suddenly. So we knew that Ed Miliband was coming, was it a week before he came? And so all these have happened. Who would have thought that it would have happened so suddenly? Now, we talked about Judah, didn't we? We talked about the fact that Judah helped to save Joseph, helped to lead his family into Israel, saved Benjamin. It was Judah that did that and Judah that did that. But let me tell you something. We are also an altar. And I shared this with you, that one of the things Jacob did, he did three things in Genesis chapter 28, where it says that he built an altar, he built a tent, and he dug wells. You know, and those are three different things. When you build an altar, you make yourself a place for sacrifice. An altar is a messy place. It's not an interesting sight. An altar is where you slaughter the animal, where the blood drains, and where all the mess and the pain of the animal. I don't want to paint a gory picture this morning, but just imagine what an altar would have looked like. And so he built God an altar. And I feel that God is using all this to build an altar for the church and for Christians. And so we take the flag. We took no offering last week. And one of the first questions people asked me, you didn't take an offering? I said, we didn't plan not to take an offering. The service was supposed to continue after Ed left. But there was chaos here. But is it only about offering? Now, if you have been obeying the word and learning what I've been teaching you, you would have all had online payments. You would have gone home and did your offering online. Yeah? You would have just gone home and said, thank God for today's service. I just want to bless God with my offering. I believe God is going to happen because we want to do things differently. I heard somebody say, thank God that last week was different. And because of it, they felt inspired. We want to build God an altar of sacrifice. It's not just about money. It's not just about, so you missed an offering. What about what you gained? What about the opportunity to serve the nation? What about this opportunity that was provided to do things differently that has gone out to millions of people? The BBC carried it last week. The BBC carried it. The ITV carried it. Telegraph carried it. Mail carried it. Other newspaper agencies carried it, which means millions of people would have seen it, heard it in one form, shape, or the other. What happened yesterday was carried on BBC News, although I had fallen asleep by the time it came on, and Sky carried it. Did ITV carry it as well? Oh, I didn't know. So they carried it again. Millions of people would have seen what happened. What about sending of the message across, which is what this has become? The month that we said we want to reach out to people. Who would have known when Peter said that, you know, in a meeting, we need to dedicate something to evangelism. And I said, okay, the month of April is month of evangelism. Who would have known the form and the shape it was going to take? That God was going to use it to address national issues. And you know what? My concern, sadly, is that when you look at history, it's always God's people that kill God's plans. It's never outsiders. It's always God's people that kill God's plans. It was the children of Israel that messed up God's plans. And you're looking at me as if I'm speaking heresy. When you go home, read Psalm 78. Yeah? When you go home, read Psalm 78. You will find out from that psalm how many times did it say, and the people of Israel limited God. How can a mere human being limit God? It wasn't the Philistines. It wasn't the Amalekites that limited God. It was the children of Israel that limited God, the Holy One of Israel, the Bible says. Over and over again, God wanted to do things for Israel, but Israel limited God. Who killed Jesus? I know some of you would turn around and say, the Romans killed Jesus. In a way, yes. However, who was it that handed over Jesus to the Romans? Who was it that betrayed Jesus? Yeah? Who was it that conspired and lied and gave false evidence? You see, the law is there to run through a process. And so if you present a case before the law and you meet all the obligations of that case, then you are bound to win. The children of Israel had had enough of Jesus. And who is Jesus? The Messiah that was saved was sent to save them. Romans 1:16 says Jesus brought good news first to the Jews, but the Jews rejected it. And what, instead of accepting the gospel and the good news, they conspired to kill him, buried him, and thought that was the end of the story. And so it's always the people that God has intended to do good for who go against God. It's not, let's stop blaming outsiders. Let's stop blaming the government. And I think that to an extent, as a black man, I can say this. Let the black community, for goodness sake, stop always blaming somebody else. If you call for a meeting to address issues that concern us, you don't see the leaders. And so those rules are made that work against us, and we turn around and blame the people for making the rules when we had an opportunity to have changed the situation. When we had the opportunity to say, no, we don't accept that. The church is the same. It's not Satan who is destroying the church. It's us who are destroying the church from inside. Yeah? All you need to do is turn on your TV and see some of the nonsense that we preach and we call the gospel. It's not. The devil is on holiday, as a matter of fact, because we're doing the work for him. So we can't go around and blame unbelievers for the mess that we're in. We are the ones who are generating a lot of mess, and we are the ones who are stalling the work from continuing. But you know what? As I said to both leaders, for the for as long as I have breath, for as long as I'm able to, and for as long as the anointing of God and the grace of God is still working with me, I'll continue to address issues of change that affect our people until such a time I'm not able to do it. Then I will go and live in my village. Yeah? But until then, you've got me. Sorry. You've got me, and we've got to work together. I have found something out about God. God is able to save whether by many or by few. And my job, as I get the opportunity, like we read in 2 Kings chapter 13, is to just, what did Elisha do? All he did was, he said to the king, take your bow and your arrow. And the king took his bow and arrow, and he just put his hands on the king. And he said, shoot. And he shot. And he said, shoot again, and again, and again. I believe that that's my job. My job is to put my hands on those in positions of authority and let God do what he needs to do. But I need to see change. I need to see change. I'm tired of reading the list of all the honorable MPs, and I can't see the Mwakebes or the Anikes or the Jeffersons from Jamaica or the Guyanese. I'm sick and tired of looking at the list of our high court judges, and I can't see names that I can't pronounce. And I think it is time that our children also gain places to go to Oxford and to go to Cambridge, and that they are not discriminated against when they come out of university. My father always said to me, and Sandra knows what I'm going to say, the one that ended up there, does he have two heads? Every time I came home and somebody else did better than me, my dad would sit me down and say, has he got one head or two heads? I said, Dad, one head. He said, if he has one head and he has achieved that success, you too can make it. That has become, my children will tell you, every time they come back home and they give me their result sheet, I say the same thing to them. And Sandra will, I even have taught Sandra how to say it in Igbo language. Unwerishiole. Eh? Unwerishiole. How many heads has he got? He's only got one head. I've only got one head. And I believe that God has called us at such a time as this to make significant progress. 2 Kings chapter 13. Hold the hands of the king. They may not call me again. I was surprised yesterday when I said to the prime minister, you do remember 5 years ago you were in Croydon? He said, how can I ever forget? You introduced me. I said, so you remember? How can he remember? 5 years ago when he came to Croydon and I introduced him. I tell you why he remembered, not because of me. Don't record this. He remembered because he'd gone somewhere, he used the gents, and he forgot to do every part of his mysterious ways. At least if he can't remember me for the good that I did, he can remember me because he needed to zip up. Aha! The penny just finally dropped. You know, God does things in an amazing way. So, I want to have your take on what you've heard. I want to hear your heart before we leave. I want to take a question. It doesn't sound like preaching, isn't it? What is preaching is when you bring the word of God and you practically apply it to where you are. That's the message. You download God's word and you apply it, or you interpret it in accordance with the experiences that you have gone through. That goes a long way. Question. Did you see the way I handled somebody who wanted to ask a question last week? Aren't you proud of your pastor? Some troublemakers were here. And I thought, cut Ed Miliband off. Cut every microphone off. Ed went down and said, thank you so much. You saved me. Steve Reed said to Sandra, thank you so much. You saved me. I said, and Christy is not here. She saved me too. She wanted to fight on my behalf. I said, please, don't beat up anybody today on my behalf. This is a day of joy, not tears. Right, question? Yes. Yes. In a small room that I never knew existed in Fairfield Hall. All of us, me, Sandra, Nero, we got there and we said, I've been to Fairfield Hall so many times. I never knew there was a room about the size. There are secrets, honestly, in this land that you begin to... I took somebody to Heathfield Place. Who's been to Heathfield Place in Croydon? Heathfield, have you? Heathfield? Who's been to Heathfield? You know that beautiful garden landscape? You need to go and see Heathfield Place. It's hidden somewhere. Beautiful house, beautiful scenery. The garden is beautiful. Everybody I've taken to that place, even people who were born in Croydon, said to me they didn't know it existed. There are secret places. Question. Why are you not asking questions? May to look at the Bible, and we're going to everybody who comes to the Bible thing. Let me plug this in. If you're coming to the Bible, my children, keep quiet. Stop fighting. You do enough of that at home. If you're coming to the Bible study in May to look go through the Bible, you have to sign up to a challenge. We will read through the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. And we will give ourselves time to cover the entire Bible. So we'll read it together. You read your portion on a daily basis. I'll read my portion on a daily basis. And we will circulate information around. And we will form links so that if you don't read your own, somebody will ring you at 10 o'clock at night and ask you to read your portion before you go to bed. So by the time... we give ourselves maybe 6 months or so. By the time we finish, we would have read through the Bible. So who's up for that challenge? I want to go through the Bible quickly. I want to go through from Genesis to Revelation, including the book of Numbers and Leviticus. You'll read it too. So you won't skip any. Femi, you won't skip anyone. Yeah? So we'll read everything. So that will start in May, and we'll see how God takes us. Okay, I noticed some people have gone upstairs for refreshments, so there will be refreshments upstairs. We're going to pray. It was my mom's birthday on the 17th of April. We never got a chance to pray for her last week. It was Onyi's birthday last Monday, although she doesn't need any prayer after the husband took her on a cruise on Monday. She does not need any prayers. Anybody who goes on a cruise on their bed, they've got their prayers answered. Huh? Jasper as well. It was your birthday as well? So who else? Okay. All the birthday peoples. The anniversary is tomorrow. Or is it today? Femi, send them out to the door. Christopher Anoyi, is their wedding anniversary today? I thought it was tomorrow. So you're going to dance, guys. Okay? So go to the door. We have to fulfill all righteousness before we go. No. I am in charge here.